No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Today we're going to have a special guest with us, Ashley Tillery, who is going to talk about grassroots organizing and how to get involved in your community. But before we go there, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who is back in the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
No problem, but I'm not in Arizona. I'm in Kansas.
No, what the hell are you doing in Kansas?
I came back to Kansas for a couple of days. And, you know, Kansas is a very intriguing place. I went to a big soccer game. I think it was Friday and whatever. And it was United Manchester City versus Sporting KC, which is, you know, they're even opening a training camp here in Kansas for soccer. It's becoming a big, huge deal, and they have an incredible stadium. I mean, it was just very impressive, you know, to be in the heartland of America and see soccer be such a huge deal.
Well, I've been to Kansas. It's probably a great place to play soccer because it's absolutely flat. There's no hills. There's not a hill anywhere.
There's a few little hills.
Interesting.
It's in, and the other thing, too, is that I got together with four other couples that we all hung out together 40 years ago when I was at Stevens in Columbia, Missouri, and they all ended up moving to Kansas City. They all went to college together, were, you know, college sweethearts, all married, all stayed married. You know, and it was just really, it was really interesting to see him 40 years later. And it was amazing. A lot of them hadn't really, you know, their voices were the same. So it was kind of like, I guess, going back in time for me this weekend. So
well,
it was kind of neat.
I'm sure they all got old, everybody but you. Well, why don't you introduce our guest and let's, before we bore her to death and she hangs up on us,
introduce her and
let's talk to her a little bit.
I want to talk about Kansas because Kansas is an interesting place. But yes, we have Ashley Tillery. And Ashley, I think I said that correctly, I'm hoping, your last name. And we actually met on the streets of D.C., as you sometimes will end up meeting other activists. And Ashley comes, I'm really curious about her telling us on her background, but we met as she was working for a campaign she was working for, and we started talking, and I thought it would be great to get her on because I had become so frustrated with so many young people not wanting to stop and listen to what I was talking about or to sign a petition. So we started a conversation, and so therefore we have her on the show. Ashley, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm just so happy to be talking to you guys, especially about the idea of grassroots activism and getting young people involved. I actually listened to your show from last week, and I was listening to some of your concerns / frustrations about how active young people will be when it comes to social media and sharing their lives and updating every little thing they're doing. Like, here, let me shoot you a picture of this Frappuccino I'm drinking right now.
Right.
I don't have 5 seconds to talk about this super important political issue. And it really made me think. And, you know, honestly, because I am a canvasser, and 5 days a week you can see me on the streets of D.C. Basically shouting into the void and just seeing who responds, you know, just seeing who right. responds and who cares about the issue. But I think one thing that's really interesting, especially being in the nation's capital, is that it would seem on a certain level the attitudes that you see in D.C. are reflective of the attitudes of the country in general. And there seems to be just this incredibly narrow self-interest, and people don't seem to understand the interconnectedness of issues, right? So
right.
They'll look at an issue and be like, well, this doesn't affect me directly, but because there's this whole web of life, you know, whatever affects somebody over here actually absolutely affects you. Even if it isn't immediately, it's going to affect you in the long run. And I don't know if young people have and I'm a young person myself, you know, but I don't know if young people have that sense, especially if it's this culture that is very immediate gratification, immediate feedback. And maybe part of the issue is that, like, you know, there's no long-term planning. What's that saying? For lack of vision, the people perish. I just think young people don't have any vision.
Well, you know,
now.
I find it very interesting, Ashley, and I think it's a perfect analogy for you to say you're shouting into the void, because that's certainly how we feel. You know, we feel like we're out there and we're just constantly pushing. Our particular main issue, of course, is getting equality for the people of the District of Columbia. And that's what we do. We're out there all the time, and occasionally somebody responds. And when they do, you know, you get a great gratification out of it, and they seem very interested, and certainly at times we can generate some interest, but we spend a lot of time shouting into the void. So I find that a very interesting and appropriate analogy to use. Kathleen, what do you think?
Well, it's interesting because then Ashley, you heard my frustration with young women, probably ranging in, I'd say, 23 to 35, you know. I mean, I couldn't get them to stop to even, they wouldn't even acknowledge that I existed. And I thought, you know, like I've been kind of on this rant, you know, you have so much to lose, because when I started working, when I was 25, I remember really well them talking about I was earning 15 cents to the dollar that every man got. And then now it's 78 cents, and that didn't happen by not getting involved. You know, so I wonder if they just have become so self-involved with all this technology we have with selfies, and, you know, like you're right, you know, I'm here tonight now, and I'll be there tomorrow. And it's just, it's very sad, and it's very scary, because young people really have a lot to lose if they're not involved and make choices in everything from, you know, your county supervisor on to who represents you in Congress. So I mean, and I think that's why we were kind of like kindred spirits, because we're sitting there asking these questions and just having people go by us and not even recognize, you know, just like with a nod or thank you, but I'm not interested, you know, and then the ways in which they fend you off is kind of can be very offensive. So you have to kind of develop a thick skin. But, you know, it's really hard, because when you believe in something so strongly, and you're out there braving human nature, humankind, you know, it's kind of a very eye-opening experience, I think. And you do this every day. And do you ever get that feeling where you just don't want to go back out?
Oh gosh, constantly. But for me, especially when I'm training people, because you know, I can't talk about what I do specifically, but I do train
right.
people, and I acclimate them to the work. You know, what I tell them every day is, like, listen, you know, you get to go out there and be a superhero, because a lot of people talk about wanting to change the world, but very few people actively do it. And I think in every generation, the people who actually make things better, the people who are actually at the helm of progress, represent this passionate minority. So I tell my trainees, you are a superhero. You get to go out there and you get to change the world and you get to have the courage of your convictions. But even better than Superman or anybody else like that is that you get to let other people be superheroes too, right? Because I think oftentimes in this world with all the things that are going on, it is so easy to feel powerless, you know? And I think sometimes people get a little overwhelmed and just wish there was somebody to show them what they could do to help with what seems like, you know, these just insurmountable odds, these huge issues. So when we go out on the street and we're canvassing, we put on our cape, we put on our T-shirt, and we get to say, hey, this is something that you can do to help. And I think at that point, canvassing isn't just a job, but it's a profound privilege to say, like, this is what I did with my time. Especially in a world where I think oftentimes, you know, people go to jobs and it's just where this mindless sort of, I'm going to get this paycheck. I don't really know what my labor is going towards, but I'm going to get this paycheck and I'm going to live my life and stuff. But for us, when we look at our paycheck, there's a direct correlation between the money that we receive and what we have actually done to make the world a better place. And I don't think a lot of people get to do that. So on those days where I'm like, man, you know, I don't want to go back out there, especially if the day before, like, only one or two people stopped or,
right,
you know, somebody was incredibly rude or there's the abuse of indifference, which I think indifference can be pretty abusive. There's actually a fabulous Emily Dickinson poem about that, but I won't go into. I just remind myself, I tell myself the same thing I tell my trainees, is that you're a superhero, and it isn't always easy to be a superhero, but if you don't do it, who will? You know, if not now, when? If not you, who? And that's what gets me up. And I think oftentimes in this work, it's really easy to focus on the negative. Those stick with you more. But you have to remember, it's the yeses that matter. And once again, in every generation, going back to that idea of a passionate minority, you know, a lot of the things that have progressed us as humanity, that pushed us forward as humanity, have always come about at the hands of a passionate minority who went out there and shouted into the void and got people on board who didn't even know they cared about the issue, or people on board who cared, but they just didn't know what they could do. So the work is really important, even if it's difficult.
So, Ashley, what first got you involved? What's the first issue that got you involved and got you started? Because I agree with everything you say, and you know, I train people to run in politics. I've done that for years. But, you know, I first got involved in an issue in my community, and I think once you get involved, you tend to stay involved. So what's the first thing that got you involved?
Well, I think the first thing that got me involved was probably my parents. My mom's an attorney, and she was seven when I was seven when she graduated from law school, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember the speech she gave, and it was the most amazing speech. And like one thing she said is that this country has not arrived when somebody can go to work every day and they're left to die, not because they're terminally ill, but because they're terminally poor. We haven't arrived when a child can lie hungry in a gutter, but we will walk over him because it is more convenient to focus on our own lives than to figure out how we can create a society that also makes this person's life better. So that's when I was seven, and that's when the seed of social activism was planted. Then when I went to college, I started my college career at Tuskegee University, which is in Alabama's Black Belt. And it's a great school.
It is a great school.
But it's an island of plenty in a sea of want. And there was a vast disparity between the lives of the kids who were in school and the lives of the kids who were on the other side of the fence. And I remember thinking we should do something about that. And I got involved with a mentoring program. And then we would do park cleanups and stuff. And then I was in AmeriCorps, and I got to have a direct impact on that issue as a rural product developer. And then later down the line, when I was in Florida, I started a program specifically to address the educational needs of low-income students, because when they go to school, it isn't like they go to school and all they have to focus on is, like, you know, Chaucer and calculus. They're also thinking about, how do the lights stay on? Are we going to have food on the table? Right. And I created a program that would address those needs while also accounting for the Florida Sunshine Standards. So those were the things that got me involved. It started with my mother and that call to action. And I think, you know, by default, to whom much is given, much is expected. And just staying involved, because for me, it's not enough to bear witness. I think it's Eleanor Roosevelt who has that quote that, like, it's like, it isn't enough to talk about peace, you have to believe in it. It's not enough to believe in peace, you have to work at it. And I think you can replace peace with any social issue. It isn't enough to talk about economic equality. It isn't enough to talk about reforming the education system. It isn't enough to talk about women's rights. It isn't enough to talk about any of these things. You have to believe in it, and you have to work at it. And it's the call of every generation. In every generation, we have to work at it. I mean, like, what's the idea? More perfect union. What does that mean? It's good, but it can be better. And every generation has to push to make it better. So that's how I got involved, starting with my mother. And just,
well, that's what we say in politics. You can talk the talk, but you have to walk the walk.
Exactly.
And I have to say, Ashley, that when we met on the sidewalk, you know, and there is a lot of joy when you do have those days where maybe one or two out of 20 will stop and listen and actually thank you for what you do, and you're just so shocked by it, but yet it makes it feel all the worthwhile, and we can, like you say, make a change in one person's mind. And that's what we've always talked about here. Everyone's effort makes an impact. And when people say, oh, there's nothing I can do, it's just by talking to each other and finding that common ground and keep on going. And when I met you, I said, God, this, you have such a good energy about you, and it's such a positive energy that I really commend you, because I know that it can be difficult, you know, and there's some days that you just, like, it's that one little thing that makes you keep on going, because I know I had a lot of days where I was hitting the wall. But you definitely have a great attitude, and it's great to hear someone of your youth feel the way that you do, because it reminds me of people, remember, Michael, in the 60s and 70s, we would talk like that, and you don't hear that as much anymore, that, you know, giving that making that social change, which means having work at it hard. So it's great to hear what you're doing. And now, and I also saw that you have an art background too, right?
Yes.
Well, how does that come into play with what you've done?
How does art come into play? Actually, I've always really enjoyed art. My parents are avid art collectors. And for me, it came out in a lot of ways. I used to do a lot of social commentary art, and that's a whole other, like, fascinating story. Well, actually, so I didn't do art in college. I did political science in IH, but I always really enjoyed it. And I remember I hooked up with this artist in Atlanta. You know, I just sort of met him, and I was like, can you take a look at my stuff? And this was something that was very interesting, and he was like, hey, Ashley, you know, your art's really good, but your art only presents problems. You would be an irresponsible artist if you also didn't present solutions. So in some ways, that kind of ties back into what we're talking about, right? Because everybody knows what the problems are. But the rare breed is the one who presents and works towards solutions, which you and Mr. Brown have been doing for a really long time. I'm just really honored to be talking to you guys, because, you know, I do my research too. I listen to the program and stuff. And it's like, man, these are the real deal. I hope to be like them when I grow up.
Well, you know what? We're honored to talk to you, Ashley, and I believe you're the real deal. You've restored my faith in young people. It's really, really gratifying to hear somebody that's so introspective as you are at such an early age, because I think that's part of the problem, too. I'm a parent, and, you know, for young people, it really is all about them. And when they're very young, you know, you accept that. But when they get older, it's nice to see that some of us at least blossom like you do and understand that there's a whole big world out there that you need to reach out to. And the hope is they reach back. And I say what you say all the time. I tell people, just imagine if we could get voting, if we could get equal rights for the people of Washington, D.C., for example, you would not just change things for the people that live in the district now. You would change it forever. For millions and millions and millions of people to come. So I think you're right. I think it's an honor to serve. And I certainly am glad you realize that. And I think you're an inspiration. I really do.
Thanks, guys. Well, on that happy note.
What else is going on with you?
Nothing much right now. I'm working on a photography book, and all my travels and all the people I meet, I always take pictures and portraits of the places I go to and the individuals I talk to, and it's a lot about bearing witness. And I just did a copy for my mom, which she loves, and hopefully I will do an Indiegogo campaign to get that published and put out to a wider audience, because I think one thing that happens is social media can be used for a lot of things, right? Especially like Instagram. It's an ultimate platform. But people don't really use it to look out. They really just use it to look at their own lives. Uh-huh. And I think one way to connect people to issues is when they can see people's lives. You know, the federal work projects under FDR and stuff, how much of that was committed to documenting and looking at individuals and looking at circumstances and taking it just beyond statistics. And just, you know, fully actualizing individuals. That's kind of what I'm doing on my own right now, in addition to doing the canvassing work. So that's great. That's my thing.
We need her on statehood. What are we doing?
And you know what? I think that you do, you know, that's one of the benefits you get from this kind of work, Ashley, is that when you go out and you touch other people and you reach out, you find out that basically people are very much the same. You know, I worked in a soup kitchen for 10 years with my children. I had my children once a month go to a soup kitchen. And homeless people were, we have a lot of homeless people in Washington, and they were very mysterious to my children. They were frightening. And, you know, but then my children realized they were just like everybody else. The only thing you could say about them is that they didn't have homes. But there were nice ones, and there were mean ones, and there were happy ones and smart ones, and, you know, just like the population in general. And it really kind of demystified it for them and made them much more confident in going out in the world, I think, and reaching out to people, not trying to look at somebody and judge what they are just by looking at them, you know, trying to find out and reach out.
Yeah, you definitely built their capacity for empathy. And I think empathy is something that's really important in any sort of political endeavor. You definitely have, because I'm definitely empathetic when it comes to this D.C. statehood issue. I've lived here off and on for, gosh, like 16 years now. And, like, you know, I'm like, New Columbia probably should be a thing because, like, it's sort of crazy not to have that equal representation. It's sort of crazy that D.C. isn't a state yet. It really is. But,
well, we're going to talk about that in a minute, and I'm glad, you know, if I could get you involved, Ashley, I'm sure it would be only a matter of a short amount of time before we became a state, because you seem to have not only the energy, but the spirit, and you certainly are wise beyond your years, I would say, and your mom should be very proud of the inspiration she provided for you, because boy, oh boy, it's gone a long way. And by the way, I know that you've done work for the Southern Poverty Law Center, and one of the first guys I ever worked with in politics was Maurice Deese. So organization. Yeah, he was somebody I worked at when I worked for the Democratic Party, and we did direct mail, which is one of the many things that this fabulous lawyer from Alabama does. It's great to hear from young people who are really involved, because as Kathleen said, you know, back in the 60s, we all came together a lot more than we seem to now over social issues, you know, not just the music and the art. You know, as far as art goes, I hope that you'll continue to pursue that vigorously, because that's really what brings people in. We have a guy that works with us who worked on the Hill for a very long time, who often uses the example of Martin Luther King's birthday, that we tried for many, many years, social activists tried for many years to make that a holiday, and they were never really successful at it until Stevie Wonder got out there and wrote a song and played it on the East Lawn of the Capitol, and 50,000 people showed up. Yeah. Next day, people were sponsoring legislation to make his birthday a national holiday, and of course that came to pass. So art is what motivates us, and I hope you'll stay involved in that and continue to do that. Yeah. Kathleen, anything else you want to ask this wonderful young woman?
I think we should keep in touch with her and bring her back on about statehood, and maybe we can get her to help us reach out to the younger people who are, you know, in D.C. but don't vote in D.C. and don't seem to get involved. And that's the thing I've never understood, is because if you live in a city, how can you not get involved in the politics of that city? So Ashley, it was real inspiring for me to meet with you when I met with you on over there in was 14th of you, Columbia Heights. And and I really want to, I really am thankful that I did meet you, because you do give me that sense of, well, okay, you know, it's not all lost. There's youth that are involved, and if you're training other youth to work in what you believe and how you believe and how you approach it, I mean, it's just fantastic. Thank you for what you do.
Yeah, thank absolutely. You so much for having
and
me
I'll
on.
Tell you, Kathleen and I try desperately to reach out to young people, but we've reached the age where we have to take a nap. We have to take a nap in the middle of things, and that usually screws it up for us. So
we should definitely get together. Let's figure this out together. I would love to help.
Great.
We hope that when you get your photo book out there and you continue on your path to make our community and our country a better place to live, that you'll come back and visit us again. We'd really, really like to have you on the show.
I would love to be back. Thank you so much. This was such an honor. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks.
All right, Ashley.
Bye,
we
guys.
Really bye.
That's so
yeah.
I feel inspired. Now I feel like an
Me
old
too.
Cranky person. I've been too cranky.
She makes up for all the people that wave their hand at you when you try to talk to them, like, no, or they say things like, I'm good.
Stay away.
How do you know if you're good? You're not, you won't even listen to what we have to say. But, she's a real inspiration. Well, we're going to take a little break and come back. And I was going to dedicate this song to Ashley. We should dedicate it to her. But here's one from John Mayer, and it's called Waiting on the World to Change. And Ashley is certainly not waiting on the world to change. She's actually out there changing it. So this is for all the young people out there. We'll be back and join Ashley. Don't wait for the world to change. But this goes out to all of you. We'll be back in a few minutes. and welcome back. And I hope you enjoyed our guest, Ashley. I hope she'll come back and talk to us again soon. She really inspired Kathleen and I. It's great to see young people out there not only talking the talk, but walking the walk and doing the legwork to get it done. So thanks, Ashley. We'll keep an eye on you. I hope you'll keep an eye on us. Let's talk about a few things that have gone on in the district this week. First of all, yay! We love President Obama, who was asked by a high school student at a press conference that he held how he felt about D.C. statehood. And he said, I'm for it. He said the people of the district contribute just like everybody else. They pay taxes just like everybody else, and they should be a state just like everybody else. So we really applaud that. Thank you, Mr. President.
And they contribute like everybody else.
They contribute just like everybody else.
They
ought to be treated just like everybody else. And, you know, this is important because what the president says from his bully pulpit really carries a lot of weight. You know, I remember that John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And it inspired a whole generation of us to go out and get involved. And then Lyndon Johnson in the 60s, when we were doing well and the country was prospering, said, what are we going to do with our largesse? What are we going to do with this wealth and prosperity that we have found? Are we going to sit on our laurels, or are we going to create a great society? And that's what he did. He created a great society. They passed 200 pieces of legislation in his first term in office. Imagine that. There was an article in the Washington Post last week, Kathleen, about how people aren't even protesting on Capitol Hill because Congress isn't doing anything.
It's not worth it.
Right. There's not even anything to protest because these guys aren't doing anything.
It was interesting because it was a cost analysis of what they got the benefit going up on the Hill. And they realized with the Hill that does absolutely nothing and passes no legislation, it doesn't matter to protest because nothing is even going anywhere. So, I mean, it's amazing. When did that ever happen that a Congress is so inept that it's not even worth to go and protest? I mean, that's not saying a lot. I don't know what is, you know?
That's right. Well, they're just locked in this you know, gridlock, and they can't move in either direction. And it's just terrible, you know? I mean, we certainly had this problem on our show where we tried to get people to come on and talk about both sides of the issue and both sides of issues. And very often we can get one side on, but we can't get the other. You know, and until we sit down and we listen to each other and we talk and we listen reasonably to what each side has to say, we're never going to move. You know, my dad used to say, you can never learn anything new from somebody that agrees with you. And there's a truth to that. You know, if you're not willing to listen to the other side, you'll never evolve. You'll never become fully educated on any particular issue. So we need to do that. And that leads me to one of our recurring issues. And that's, I guess, the downside in the district. We'll see this week. Judge Frederick Scullin, who's a federal judge, ruled that D.C.'s ban on carrying handguns in public was unconstitutional. Now, we have to see how this pans out, because if people are required to have carry permits and they do background checks and those handguns that they carry are registered, I really don't have a problem with it. But, you know, we will have to see how the law plays out to see if that happens.
Well, as I understand it, what it means is that you have a right to be able to protect yourself outside of your home. So not only do you have the right to have a gun at home to protect yourselves against intruders, you also have the right to go outside of your home with your gun to protect yourselves from anybody who may want to accost you or assault you or kill you, I assume. So then anybody that goes into D.C. now, if you follow what this federal judge is saying, can have a gun. Okay, so you saw what happened to that guy that tried to go into the Rayburn Building. He was a staffer, and he had a gun. And so how is that going to play? How does that play?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting point. And, you know, I think, you know, it's funny that all these guys that want to change the gun laws in the district in Congress, they don't want you carrying a gun into the Capitol. You know, they're all talking about how having people with guns makes you more safe. But when you go into the Capitol of the United States, you better not have a gun on you. And there's a very famous case, actually, where a guy came to Washington from Texas and had a handgun, a Derringer, actually, that had been passed down in his family. And it was given by Sam Rayburn to his father, his grandfather, I think. It was really an heirloom. And the Capitol Police, he surrendered the gun. He even told them. The Capitol Police took it from him, and they were going to melt it down, destroy it, which is what they do with guns that they confiscate. But there was a special ruling that if he donated it to the Smithsonian Institution they wouldn't destroy it. So that's what he did. So you're not allowed to carry a gun in the Capitol, and we'll see what happens there. The Capitol Police are different from the D.C. police, and they're more like federal cops, like the Border Patrol. You know,
then you have the park cops too. Then you have who's. This just seems so confusing because it seems that these guys don't think anything out. How the hell could that even happen? How could it come to be? I mean, so now anybody visiting from a tourist can carry a gun. So they're going to carry a gun into the Washington Monument?
Yeah, and across the street from the White House in Lafayette Park. And, you know, they tried to pass a law that you could carry semi-automatic weapons in federal parks. So you could have a semi-automatic weapon across from the White House. How crazy is that? With all the politicians we have in Washington and all the other stuff we have going on, I mean, we certainly need some special...
Maybe you guys need to get hold of Gifford and Kelly, you know, because it's amazing to me that this is really something that here you have a law that the people have passed as a people who are governing themselves as they would in any other city. And they passed this law, and now you have a federal judge. And I guess it was an organization was a Second Amendment right organization that first filed this in 2008, and I guess this judge just came up with the opinion now, which I don't understand why it took so long.
Well, no, the thing in 2008, which the same group filed, was a thing called the Heller decision, and the Supreme Court actually struck down. The district had very strict gun laws, and the Heller decision actually struck down the strict gun laws that we had in the district that didn't allow you to have a loaded handgun even in your home.
I guess when I, you know, coming back to visit, I know a lot of people in D.C. who are not involved at all in D.C. politics. They don't know who's running for city council. They probably are even clueless to maybe who's even running for mayor. And I can't understand why they don't get involved, because surely this is the kind of stuff that would start to, I would think, raise people's eyebrows or some concern that, you know, you're passing these, or the judges are going to come down with this kind of ruling. And that you have somebody from Kentucky who's trying to do the same kind of thing in the city that you live.
Well, you know, maybe it will, because I think that you reach a tipping point with you know, if you look at the Montgomery bus boycott, how many years had African Americans been sitting on the back of the bus? And you know what? I think that there were probably even people like Rosa Parks. I don't think Rosa Parks was the first person to refuse to give up her seat on the bus. I think she just did it at exactly the right moment. And some people may not know that Rosa Parks was an activist. She wasn't just a seamstress. She was somebody that was involved in the movement for civil rights. So she knew what she was doing. And she made that move at exactly the right moment. And people, it resonated with people. They said, yeah, enough is enough, enough. This lady's on her way home from work. She's a seamstress, for God's sake, and she's got to move on the bus, and she doesn't want to do it, and she's right. We pay the same fare that everybody else pays, and that's the situation in the district. We pay the same fare that everybody else pays. In fact, we pay more. We got the highest per capita federal income taxes in America. So maybe this will resonate with people. Maybe people will say enough is enough. The president is right. We should be a state. And it'll generate some movement. I hope it does.
I hope it does, too, because it's interesting that in 1 week you had the president say that, you know, the statehood is the right thing to do. And then in that same week, you have a judge that's, you know, going against what people have decided they want for themselves. I mean, one of the things we've discussed and I believe is that, you know, people should have in these different regional areas, like, you know, my sister out on the ranch in the border of Mexico should have a right to decide how they're going to defend themselves, whether they don't want any guns in their city or whether they do want guns. But this is just, you know, this is just playing politics or playing almost, I don't want to say it's playing God, but it's definitely, you know, playing a role that you should not be doing. You know, as a representative from Kentucky, you have no business trying to decide the fate of people who live in a city you have no jurisdiction over, in theory, really.
Well, and that's absolutely right. As you've pointed out, that your sister lives out on a ranch out in the middle of the desert, and, you know, she feels safer with all the stuff that goes on out there, having a gun and being a gun owner. I understand that, and the same thing goes for Washington, D.C. Here we are with all these international dignitaries and politicians and other people in the nation's capital. We have the White House, we have the Capitol, we have the Supreme Court, we have all the government agencies here. We need different gun laws. There has to be and that's why America was set up the way it is, you know, that it's a collection of states, so that states have rights to make laws for themselves. And unfortunately, the District of Columbia becomes a pawn in all this, and hopefully the people of the district will rise up over these things and say, yeah, enough is enough. It's crazy. You know, if you gave me, we have 647,000 people. If one out of every 10 of them would show up on the West Lawn of the Capitol with me, if we had 65,000 people show up in a protest, I guarantee you the statehood legislation that we have in both houses of Congress right now would move very, very quickly. But as long as we sit around and we accept this, this is what's going to happen to us. You and I know, right, from our personal experience lately, that when you say, when we're trying to get people to sign petitions, for example, and we say, sir, are you a D.C. voter? You can say that to 50 people, and somebody could be standing right next to you, and if you don't ask that question to them, they don't volunteer the information. They don't say,
right.
Oh, yeah, by the way, I am. You know,
right.
You've got to make the ask, and that's what the problem is in the District of Columbia right now with statehood, is we're not making the ask. And now the president has made the ask. Maybe the rest of us will step up to the plate and do it.
Well, I think of all those people who, have worked for other senators or who have gone on to work for organizations that deal with politics. And I bet you they don't vote in D.C. And I'm going to start asking that question of them. You know, why don't you get involved in D.C. government? I mean, you know, I know that there will be a comment, well, it's all corrupt, you know, and who wants to get involved? But if you don't get involved, you can't make the change. You can't make the city honest government if you don't vote the people that you know are honest people. I mean, if you don't get involved, you just don't know. And if you keep on not voting, that just enables it to continue the way it is. So it's amazing to me that these very well-educated, very well, what would I want to say, versed in politics, would not be involved in the city that they've lived in now probably for 15, 20 years. And you know how many of those would say, I vote in Pennsylvania, or I vote in Nevada, or I vote in California.
Right. That's absolutely right. And right, you have to. And by the way, that's illegal if you're a resident of the District of Columbia to vote in another state. You're supposed to vote here. But you know, people do it all the time. They don't want to lose their representation, and we certainly understand that. But you're right. You need to get involved in your own community to make a difference. And if Ashley Tillery didn't inspire you to do that, I don't know what can, because it really is important for you to be, you know, that's another old cliche we have, that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. But it's very, very true. And here in the district, we accept that. You know, we even have people say to us, well, I don't believe that we should have the same rights as everybody else. I don't believe we should be a state. I believe that we should, you know, we should be controlled by the federal government. Hello? You know, I mean, I know that there were people that felt like that during the revolution. They were called loyalists, who believed that that King George should run the country. But you know what? King George shouldn't run the District of Columbia. We should run it ourselves. And I think most Washingtonians believe that, but they don't move. As Ashley, again, you know, pointed out, they don't see the direct connection to what they do. They can't connect the dots. And that's one of the things we try to do for them, is connect the dots.
Well,
so again, folks, we were cut off for a while, so we're going to extend the program another several minutes, and we apologize for the interruption. What else do you want to talk about, Kathleen?
Well, we have another about 5 minutes. And one of the things I was very intrigued about, two things here in Kansas. A, I was sitting here watching TV, which was a Fusion Network, okay, which I guess is not really a mainstay. But I was so surprised that they had Spanish-speaking commercials intertwined with regular English programming. So it was the first time I've ever seen, you know, you're watching a movie, and then all of a sudden a Spanish-speaking commercial comes up, and another one, and then it goes back to English. It was amazing, as you know, as being Hispanic, it's kind of, to me, like this huge breakthrough that the Hispanic population has become so large now that we would be doing this kind of marketing on TV. I find it amazing. And the other thing interesting was, I've been listening to Race. They have a Democrat, Pat Roberts, who has been in politics, has been the senator for 47 years. And nobody really knows what he's done. And I hate to say it, but I don't really remember him either. So it's not to say that he didn't do anything, but I don't remember ever having him co-sign anything that I worked on when I was on the Hill. Then they have a gentleman who's a dentist who's running on the fact that he is a conservative Republican, and that once he gets elected, after that term, 6 years, he's going to go back to practicing medicine, which amazes me, because I know when you take that kind of a break from medicine, you don't just jump back into your practice, because there's so many things that change and stuff. Then for that same race is a new ad for an independent. And his ad is very interesting. It's a tug of war between the Democrats and the Republicans. And he talks about how just there's no movement anymore, and that what people really want is common sense and finding common ground. And, you know, where people really want government to be, you know, be fair, be efficient, do the right thing, and for it to stay out of their everyday lives, in a sense, you know, like how the conservative Republicans are always wanting to tell us what to do with our lives socially. So I find that in the heartland of America, very interesting trends are going on here. And, you know, it was kind of like a sign of faith that here's an independent running on the fact that, you know, if these guys, Democrats, Republicans, can't together, there may be an independent party. Maybe, you know, a different look at it, it is the way to go. So it's interesting.
Well, you know, I guess that there certainly has always been that movement in America. You know, we've seen it in presidential politics with people like Ross Perot and Ralph Nader and people that have run as independents or run in other parties like the Green Party. But the only problem that I have with that is that, you know, I remember studying the politics of Italy, and the Italians, in one sense, have to be the greatest democracy in the world, because they let everybody run the country. It seems like every party runs the country for a month, and then they're out of power and somebody else comes in. I forget the amount of governments they had. In 10 years, they had a ridiculous number of governments.
They had like 28 parties or something like that. I know.
Yeah, they have tons of parties, you know.
But Michael, unless something else happens, I don't know. The Republicans are getting to the point that they're so far right for this guy to actually go and be a conservative Republican. You know, you never had those kinds of labels. So, you know, I'm not just a Republican. I'm a conservative Republican. And then, you know, you get the Democrats who are, you know, now the party line is don't talk to each other. So maybe independents running will shake everyone up a little bit and get them to realize, you know, you may be voted out of your job. You may not be part. There may not be a Republican or Democratic Party if you guys don't get your stuff together and at least be able to legislate or to be able to vote on laws and get them passed. I mean,
well, that's
it's not
true. They need some strong leadership too. They need people to get in there. You know, we've seen this happen in you know, not so much in our lifetime, but or in our political lifetime. You know, you and I really got into politics in 1980, which is crazy that now that's almost 35 years ago. But before that, you had like the Dixiecrats. Remember those guys in the
yes.
South, because you couldn't get a Republican elected, so they became Dixiecrats. Here in the district, we have the same thing with you know, Democrats changing to independents because we have this set aside thing
right.
for Republicans, which is crazy. You know, we need to, and I don't know, maybe you're right. Maybe we need another party to shake things up and to say to these guys, you know, you're too far right, you're too far left, so we're going to get some people in the middle. And maybe, you know, maybe it should be Kathleen Gomez for president. Maybe we should
nominate.
And
Ashley will be my campaign manager. And
Ashley,
you can be my...
Look, if you could convince Ashley to be your campaign manager, you might win. I mean, we really need to energize people. And boy, she sounds like the kind of person that could do it.
I know. We got to get her help working for us.
I'll certainly be, you know, but I don't want a tough job. I don't want to be, you know, if you win, I don't want to be Secretary of State or
you
Secretary
can be my liaison, my consultant for the AARP. How's that?
No, AARP, thank you. I want to be like ambassador to Switzerland. You know, someplace where they never, where we always get along with each other, and you know, when it's pretty, and I can.
You'd have to be neutral. That would be against your personality, I think. But
well,
I guess we have to go. We got maybe a couple of seconds left, but I want to thank Ashley for coming on and inspiring us. And you know, everyone out there, thank you for listening. And I'm going to give you the last word this time.
All right, thanks. This is a rare treat for me. folks, thank you. We're sorry for the technical difficulties that we had today, and we certainly will try to straighten them out before next week, and we'll be back next week, and we thank you all for listening. Ashley, thanks for coming on, and please continue to listen and call in and talk to us, because we're reaching out, America. We're screaming into the void, as Ashley would say, and we hope that some of you will scream back. So have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote.